It's a post-Halloween nightmare for the Royals as they go down 3-1 at Blackburn as our miserable run on the road continues. We'll talk about that and plenty more on the Tireless End podcast, episode number 40. My name is Dan Wimbush. I'm the editor of the Tireless End, and I'm joined, as always, by Deputy Editor, Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Evening. The cold, long nights are drawing in, and it's pretty dismal for Reading at the moment, isn't it?
Clocks have gone back, and unfortunately, so are we, league position-wise.
Indeed.
And I would be joined by Mr. Alan West, others known as Westy, but he's not here today. But on the good news is we've drafted in a substitute. We've made a loan signing, and I'm delighted to say Rob Langham from The Two Unfortunates joins us once again. Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Dan. Really pleased to be here.
Yeah, I think I can't even remember what episode you appeared on. It would have been something in the teens, I'd imagine. Mm. It was about this time, around about this time last year, wasn't it?
It was this time last year, I think, because it was around the time we played Blackburn at Ewood Park last year.
Yeah.
So, which was a game I went to and decided on the basis of that game not to attend this season's fixtures. Probably wisely.
You have done very well indeed, because as mentioned, Reading have gone down to a 3-1 defeat. The short-lived blip in upturn of fortunes that we thought we might have during the Blackpool game have quickly evaporated. And it's a bit of doom and gloom all round, to be honest. But Johnny, looking at the cold light of day, is a 3-1 defeat at Blackburn all too unexpected? Bearing in mind, you sat on this very same podcast and predicted a 3-1 defeat at Blackburn.
Indeed. Well, I mean, you can't say it's unexpected from that point of view, but I think slowly Reading fans are getting into that little bit of realism that we don't necessarily want to get into, that we can't go into every game expecting that we're going to get a result. And, you know, as I said on the last couple of podcasts, we've had such a good time over the last 12, 13 years where you have legitimately gone into just about every game thinking, oh, you know, we could nick a draw here and we could, you know, even come into Ewood Park and win. And I think this year we didn't necessarily have that optimism. I think all four of us predicted that we would lose to varying degrees. And, you know, in the end, we've been soundly beaten, I think. And, you know, they were on a decent enough run of form. Our only win in the last few games was against bottom of the table Blackpool. I think it was just on the cards. And, I mean, you know, they did have a couple of good chances, put up a decent fight, but ultimately, you know, Blackburn got the job done.
Rob, are you any more pessimistic about Reading's chances on the basis of this result? Or again, is this something we should have just seen coming and it's just a continuation, really?
I would say I'm a smidgen more pessimistic, but I think Johnny's right overall. If you look at Blackburn, they've spent a lot of money over recent years, and Jordan Rhodes alone cost £8 million, which is double or more than double the most that Reading have ever paid for a player. But I think to once again see the defence capitulate and once again letting three goals away from home does provide a little bit of worry, a little bit of extra worry in my mind.
A lot of people have picked up on Nigel Adkins' team selection, and Charles Watts, Tireless End podcast extra co-host, put this question to him about his team selections. And a lot of people are pointing to the fact that Jamie Mackie and Simon Cox have both been dropped, and two of arguably our best players this season. Mackie just coming off a man of the match performance against Blackpool, and Cox going into the game our top goal scorer. But for me, Johnny, that had very little to do with the actual result, because once again, as Rob's mentioned, the defence has capitulated again. Have you did the team selection draw your eye a pre-match, and looking back at it, do you think that made a big difference?
Well, I mean, in Nigel's sort of post-match interview, he said, we tried to bring in these players in order to do this. And that's all well and good, but the fact is it failed. You know, because he brought in, what was it, Hal Robson-Carnew and Taylor.
Taylor came in, yeah. Taylor Robson-Carnew kept his place. Yeah. Somehow. I don't quite know how.
And yeah. I think it was Blackman who came in as well. And, you know, Blackman's a good player. I'm a big fan of his. But Hal, I'm not quite sure how he justifies his place. And Taylor, you know, he scored a good few goals for us, some key goals. But again, I think you sort of know his limitations. And those two players, Mackie and Cox, do excite you as players, because Cox has an eye for goal. And Mackie, as Wesley said last week, he's the fan on the pitch. He will run and run and run. And, you know, as I said, Nigel came out in his post-match and he said, well, we brought in these players because we wanted to stop them playing through the middle. That just drew them out wide. We knew we have a weakness anyway. And I think, if, you know, if he'd come out and said, well, we did this, we made these tactical adjustments to try and shut down Blackburn and it had worked, then you say fair play to him. And it's sort of the manager's curse in that you try something and it doesn't work and instantly all the pressure's on you.
Well, Rob, I mean, Nigel Adkins came out and said, oh, well, you know, we played really well in the first half and more than deserving of a point. Does that not back up my team selection. Do you agree with those sorts of arguments?
Well, not at all. It's a 90-minute game. And although I have a tendency to be lenient towards Adkins, I think, as Johnny said, that he specifically said he wanted to pick a team where the two wide players, Taylor and Blackman, would tuck in and defend better. But we had some stats on the site earlier on today which show that that just didn't happen at all. And Ben Marshall was just left to run at will at Chris Gunter, the hapless Chris Gunter, as he's quickly becoming known as. And really, I think Adkins has to hold his hands up and say he got it wrong this time.
Yeah, Chris Gunter's form certainly deteriorating. And as Ross mentioned, go check out the statistical analysis over on thetalisman.com. Some great visual illustrations of just exactly what we've just been talking about, of basically wide players left to roam free. Chris Gunter and Nick Blackman just not combining very well on that right-hand side. But, I mean, yeah, possibly bring Stephen Kelly in for me. But apart from that, again, you look at the goals and it's just bad defending. Mm. First goal, again, how often now have we seen a striker ghost in between two centre-backs for a header?
Happened at Bournemouth, didn't it, for Callum Wilson for the opening goal. And again, I think the problem is Gunter is just being exposed one-on-one far too much. I mean, there's a very simple tactic, which we often saw with teams against Jimmy Kebbe a few years ago. Put two men on him or give him a kick early in the game. If you gave Jimmy Kebbe a kick early in the game, he would not want to go at you because he was very much a confidence player and he, you know, let's be honest, he was quite fragile. The other thing teams used to do, put two men on him. And that's how teams used to shut us down because everything went through Kebbe. And if you put two men on him, you know, one doesn't go into two. You cannot, well, Kebbe could occasionally, but you can't beat two men. I mean, I think it's very simple what you have to do if you're that wide player, and that's just stick to the winger. You've got Gunter there as well, because if you've got two players on one, then most of the time you're going to win the ball. And the fact is that Ben Marshall was free for, I think, two crosses, including the one that led to the third goal eventually, because I think, was it Rowe headed it against the post? And then it rebounded out to Gestede. I think the discipline of the wingers just isn't enough at the moment. And, you know, we say that Chris Gunter keeps getting beaten, but as we've said in previous editions of the podcast, you can't put it all down to one player because it's a team effort across the board.
No, and you can see, for me, you can increasingly see why the team picked up their form last season when Joby Makinoff came back in the team, because he was a player that very much knew his defensive responsibilities and would often sacrifice his attacking intent to help out Jordan Obita. And again, is it a surprise that Jordan Obita had such a fine second half of the season? Not saying Joby McAnuff's the best player in the world, but he helped out the team. And I think you mentioned it in previous podcasts, Johnny, the fact that the wide players we're playing at the moment, they're converted forwards. They're not wide midfielders and they're not even really wingers. I mean, Rob, would you just sacrifice them entirely and just say you have to play two more, even if it is a case of, I don't know, sticking Stephen Kelly at right back and giving Gunter a run in the midfield or something along those lines?
Well, I think we're being hampered by the injuries and hopefully McCleary will be back at some point and then we have more of a balance to the team. I probably wouldn't be that keen on having Kelly, say, in front of Gunter. I think that would be very prosaic and defensive and unappealing. And I think if you want to drive fans away from the ground, that's probably a quick way of doing
it. Westy would certainly not step foot in the ground if Stephen Kelly was on the right wing.
I think really it's up to Adkins to get people to work harder and to really follow instructions. I think there was some comments during the Premier League season that Hal Robson-Kanu, I think McDermott commented at one point that he wasn't as good at tackling back as Jimmy Kebbe was. And it was something that most fans don't notice so much because we think of them as attacking players. Mm. But it's absolutely crucial to the team. Johnny's made the point on this podcast before that, you know, we have to defend as a team and, you know, the screening in front of the back four is important. Every player has to defend from the front. So you can't just blame the back four at all, I think. Mm.
And the form of a player like Chris Gunter just doesn't just drop off. Because we said last year he was solid 7 out of 10 every single game. I think he came third in our player of the season. That just doesn't happen overnight or over the course of a post-season / pre-season. Because it's a completely different dynamic to the team, whereby he's got a different player in front of him. He's got a different sort of front four to work with, basically. And you just look at how we line up at, say, goal kicks. It's almost a 4-0-6. You've got, or sorry, like a 6-0-4. You've got the four sort of forward players right up against their back four. Mm. And then the entire midfield area is completely exposed. And when you've got that, you've just got one-on-one against the defence.
Absolutely. And it's no shock. I mean, I'm looking at our player ratings over the past few weeks, and Gunter's form is just... I mean, it's gone off a cliff, from, as I said, from that solid...
It's tailing off, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the last five games are 6 out of 10, 4 out of 10, 4, 6 and a 5. Can you keep... Is there any danger, Rob, of keeping the armband on a player that is so badly out of form? And for me, at least, certainly, I think needs a break. I mean, I know we joke that Stephen Kelly's not maybe the answer, especially in the long term, but do you maybe just have to sit him out and take him out of the firing line?
I think possibly as the captain, although I think the armband is actually an overrated concept in football. I don't think it's that important these days like it was in the old Bobby Moore days, etc. But I would possibly give him a rest from the armband, and much as I haven't particularly been impressed with his form either, I'd probably give it to Alex Pearce because I like a central defender as a captain. I think Gunter will be fine again once McCleary's back in the team. I think we forget they had those years at Nottingham Forest together. You get that understanding over like half a decade, and it's so crucial. And also McCleary's pace allows Gunter, takes the pressure off him. And Blackman, I think he's had a decent season compared to how he played in his previous seasons for Reading, but he's so languid and you know, not the best tackler back. So I think at the moment, if nothing else, they're still getting used to one another. So
yeah, and they've not, again, as we mentioned, with the constant team changes, he's not had a chance to make a regular partnership, because he's had one week he's got Mackie in front of him, the next minute it's Blackman, then it's a Robson Kanu, maybe it's a Cox, maybe it's a Taylor. So maybe we should be cutting him a little bit more slack. But anyway, we've dealt enough on the negative. Let's look at some of the bits of positive. And one was another goal for Glenn Murray. And we had a comment in from someone on Twitter saying you guys weren't particularly high on Glenn Murray. And I know... I don't think we've necessarily been shouting from the rooftops about how great he is, but I think we've been fairly pleased with him. And again, he showed exactly what he can do. Typical poacher's goal, good finish. And what's up to now, 4 or 5 goals for the season?
5 goals for the season, I think. Hit the bar as well, which, well, an early goal like that really could have changed the course of the game. I mean, the point I wanted to make on this goal was a beater. I've said repeatedly that he has the best cross in the Reading squad, right to the back post. I don't want to use the phrase corridor of uncertainty because I hate it, but that's what it was. And keeper doesn't know whether to come for it. Defenders don't want to touch it because they're going to get an own goal in the books. And Murray's just there to tap it in. And, you know, he's got that goal poaching instinct whereby he can link up play, but then he can also get into the box as well. And that's not something we've had in a striker for a good few years, I think probably since someone like either Shane Long or Dave Kitson, where not only can they win a header, but then they can also get back into the box as well and support the attack or finish off the attack.
Yeah, I mean, 5 goals in 9 starts, and that would be 6 if he hadn't had such a woeful penalty against Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, you can't argue with that. And I looked at the betting, I think, for the Golden Boot, and I think he's still fairly fancy. I think it's 33-1, I think it's the best you can get on him. And that's not a bad shout if Reading did eventually manage to pull their fingers out and get a few players back. So it's not bad. But what have you made of Glenn Murray so far, Rob?
Oh, I think he's done all that's you could expect. I think he's been really good. I think he's quite mobile. He's an old-fashioned centre-forward, but he's mobile as well. He knows where the goal is. I mean, yes, he's benefited from a couple of goalkeeping errors with his last 2 goals, but he's been really lively, and I think it's been a really good pick from Adkins. And I think that's the thing that's really saving Adkins at the moment, is some of the more impressive players are the players he's brought in, his signings. I think you've already talked about this in the last couple of weeks.
But anyway, I mean, that just about wraps up the game. I said 3-1 win for Blackburn. We'll look ahead to the next couple of games and any team change we might make, and also a couple of individual performances as well that we haven't touched on. We've got a few questions. The name Hal Robson-Kanu will be mentioned a fair few times in the tweets and emails, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, not an awful lot of news bites, so we're going to skip straight to pub chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. As I said, not really many news bites, but we will go and talk a few news lines and injury updates with Charles Watts on the Podcast Extra on Friday. Apologies for that there was no show last week. As you can appreciate, Charles, just being a new father, he's got a set of responsibilities. And when he was in, I was out. And when I was out, he was in. So unfortunately, we didn't get a show recorded. He did correctly predict the Blackburn result. And this isn't one of those fake ones like the Fulham, where he tweets me after. I've got evidence that he tweeted correctly. So you and Charles both correct. I don't think
steaming
Charles
ahead.
Yeah, I don't think Charles had the same bet you had on.
No, first goal scorer as well. That was tasty.
Yeah, Johnny winning a decent three figures with a Justine first goal and a 3-1 win. So yeah, the pints at the Christmas party are on Johnny. He's told us this off air.
Depends how many turn up. It might have to be half pints or soft drinks. We'll see.
So mine's a soda and lime. Anyway, so yeah, we'll sit down with Charles on Friday and get the very latest. Obviously, there's a fair few injury lines going around, so we'll get the very latest then. But in the meantime, with Rob here, thoughts, just in terms of, for Pub Chat this week, I thought Championship-wide debate maybe, but then a tweet came in from someone talking about style of football. And this has been, I'm going to save the whole Adkins in-out debate because I don't think we're quite there yet. And we do have some questions on it as well later. But the question was, you know, what is the Adkins style of football? Do you like it? Or would you like to go back to what we've seen under Coppell, McDermott, etc.? Because is it a coincidence that Reading fans seem to grow very impatient quickly with managers like Brendan Rodgers and Nigel Adkins? So branching it out then, guys, does the style of football matter to you, as long, or is it all about results? Can one exist without the other? Johnny, I'm going to start with you.
I think you can have one existing without the other, but you can't have neither existing. You know, if you're getting the results, I mean, we often go back to the McDermott season when we eventually got promoted, and we often say, oh, we didn't deserve to get promoted, we didn't play well enough to get promoted. It's one of those commonly sort of reeled out things that somehow we managed to sneak results. You think when we were 1-0 away at Brighton, even when we were sort of under the cosh at West Ham and managed to pull it round before half time to eventually win that 4-2. We were outplayed a lot of times, but the results sort of mitigated that, and we were happy to go along with it because we were winning. And ultimately, eventually, you know, we won the championship on that occasion. If you're not getting the results, then you can say that the style of football, you can appreciate that because you're playing well. But I think even to that extent, football is all about getting results, is all about finishing as high up as you can in the table, about building a good squad, about winning games and ultimately making money, although football's not a money-making business. I think you can just about have one without the other, but you can't have neither. And I think that is what is getting on the minds of the Reading fans at the moment, that we're not quite getting either.
I would agree 100%. I don't think we're really getting passing football. We're getting a lame attempt at attempting passing football because we don't perhaps have the players. We certainly don't seem to have the tactics at the moment. It's not like when Brendan Rodgers came in, where yes, the results weren't there, but you could see from the first game of the season, that season against Nottingham Forest, we were absolutely religiously keeping the ball on the floor. Now it's neither one or the other. The ball is still going long a lot from Federici. You know, we're not passing the ball through midfield, keeping it on the floor as much as Adkins would like to pretend we are.
Basically. Just on that point, sorry, if I can cut in, we always used to say how Alex McCarthy or Adam Federici would pass the ball short at goal kicks, and that would often get us into a lot of trouble. I can't remember the last time Adam Federici kicked a goal kick short, because clearly Adkins has said, boot it long,
ping it to Blackman
or Murray, you know. Yes. So anyway,
which is hardly a rarefied style of football that's really appealing. So yeah, you're dead right. We're not getting either at the moment.
Do you think possibly it's a case? I mean, last season, I think there was definitely an attempt at the start of the season to introduce play a certain way, especially when I think he thought he had the backing of Anton Zingarevich to bring in certain players. And then obviously around Christmas, when form was going absolutely to pop, I understand there was a players meeting and they asked Adkins, oh, can you let us play our way and see results? And I think he did it on the basis of, we need to get up. The financial situation of the club means that promotion is going to have to come ahead of anything we can do. Do you think he's caught in two minds at the moment about, do I tell the players to keep playing this way or do I abandon it for results? Do you think that's what's getting in the way?
Well, I think as a manager, you always have to have your own brand of football. But, you know, there's sort of an argument about square pegs and round holes. And, you know, we've just spent the whole time criticising the wide midfielders / wingers because they're not necessarily wingers. And in this sort of system, you do need wide midfielders who have that defensive responsibility. You know, think back to when we did go up under Coppell, we had two sitting midfielders, or well, one was slightly more dynamic in Sidwell. You generally played with two forwards, one big and one small, with Kitson and Doyle and Leiter and Long. And you had two wingers in
Little and Convey.
Little and Convey, or Stephen Hunt, or John Oster as well, who had that attacking impetus but also had that defensive instinct. Move forward to McDermott, you had Kebby and McEnough, you had two sitting, Carachan and Ledgerwood, or Tab or Mullins sitting in there, and then you had Robertson Hunt up front. With this team, I'm not quite sure what he, you know, what he needs, because you could argue that our left back isn't a proper left back. We're in the middle of the park, we're quite weak, and we've got the passer in Norwood. We've got Cox and Murray up there as well. We've got Mackie, who's a bit of a converted winger. I'm not quite sure that Adkins quite knows what he wants or what he needs from his players. I think, as you made the point earlier, he's bought the right players and they're doing well for him. But I think in January, we'll have to wait and see what he does then, and whether he brings in more players, whether the Thai consortium give him more money to bring in more players who can actually play the style of football that he wants to play.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the lack of wingers is something I think someone on Twitter raised earlier on. Obviously, McCleary's injured. Wilson Canoe's a bit out of form, and Adkins insists on playing him in a more central role. Abita is arguably going to be more useful to us on the left wing. And at the moment, we lack that width, which is just totally fundamental to both the McDermott and Coppell sides. You know, Reading have been a team that have deployed wingers for a long time now. And in terms of the pure passing, I think you have to go all the way back to Mark McGee for a team that actually sort of passed the ball really beautifully. I mean, that still, for me, I think, was one of the most appealing sides.
No, I agree.
Had. So, yeah.
The only question then I'll ask is, would you be prepared to sit through another period of telling them to religiously play the ball on the floor? Just say, OK, I'm going to play an Aaron Cole, going to give him the chance to bed in. I'm going to play a... I don't know if they thought Jake Cooper was the answer. I don't think he's a great passing defender. But you know what I mean? Are you prepared to sit through those growing pains? Because sometimes I think that fans aren't prepared to go through the pain to get the benefit. Because it's very hard, unless you have got an absolute wad of cash, which Reading, it doesn't seem they've got, to just do that and change the style of football. People always talk about Swansea. Bear in mind, Swansea went down to the very bottom division of English football and built from that point up. Very few sides are able to do it on the fly while still being competitive. And if Reading fans are expecting us to continually get results while not spending money and changing the style, for me, something's got to give. Now, as long as we're not in imminent danger of relegation, I don't mind if you take some backward steps and you slowly deploy a philosophy. But I think you two have both hit the nail on the head. He almost seems to have abandoned that for the time being. And that's what I can't quite understand. I don't know why... You don't give someone like a Cole more games if you think he's the future. I don't know. I don't know if he's feeling under pressure from the owners, but it's weird. He doesn't seem to know what he wants at the moment.
I mean, you can see in the way that the under-21s played last season, and even down in the under-18s, went along to a couple of games there. They are playing that passing game, but you cannot expect every single one of that under-21 team in 3 or 4 years to be a Reading player. It simply doesn't work like that. Not every player that you build through the youth system is going to make it into the first team, is going to be a championship caliber player. And equally as well, philosophies change. I mean, you look at somewhere like Barcelona, they dominated world football for, 5-6 years? Everyone's saying this is the beautiful game. Then they get spanked 7-0 over two legs by Munich. You know, and suddenly people are saying that style of football is dead. Football is ever evolving. It's ever changing. Just look at the change in style from 4-4-2 to 4-5-1 or 4-3-3 or pressing and all this sorts of stuff. And, you know, even 3-4-3s and 3-5-2s we're seeing a lot more teams doing, like Hull in the Premier League. It can be a long-term shift, but you can't then come along in 5 or 6 years and say, oh, well, we've suddenly brought through this system and now it's not working again. You know, the systems have evolved and people have suddenly worked out how to shut it down. I think you should stick with Adkins, and he's building the right way with the youth sides, and you can see that they're trying to play in his style, but there needs to be that evolution as well, because you can't rely on one system for 5 or 6 years and not change it.
Just to bring this to a close, where we're going long on it, but would you be happy then, Rob, to see Reading go back to that couple McDermott way. If they just said, you know what, let's just stick to what we know. Let's go back, not backwards. It's just a different style, as Johnny's just said. Would you be happy to see Reading go back to that, or do you think that in my eyes, certainly, just before I let you have a go, for me, people have a slightly rose-tinted version of that style of football, because for every greatness that we saw from the 106 side or Brian McDermott's second half wonder season, there was the early days of Steve Coppell where we were playing Lloyd Owusu, Paul Brooker and getting beat 3-0 at home by Wimbledon or getting thumped 5-1 away at Rotherham. It wasn't all roses, and sometimes that brand of football is equally appalling, as much as people slag off an Adkins or a Rodgers mode, but sorry, let me have you go. Would you be happy to see Reading go back to that? Or are you, does a new way of football interest you a bit more?
I think, I mean, do one or the other. I mean, have the courage of your convictions. I mean, that football before, I mean, apart from those periods which you've just referred to, including the Rotherham defeat at Crystal Palace, those kind of results, we were entertaining. We were zipping the ball around the pitch. You know, Marcus Hunterman was throwing out the ball to Shorey and Murty, you know, we were passing the ball. Glenn Little, I mean, who can think of a more appealing footballer than him in terms of skill? So you either do that or you do work at it, you know. I mean, I don't know, there's a debate to be had about whether Brendan Rodgers, whether we'd kept him, whether he would have turned out to be the man. And of course, he's gone on to do very well at Liverpool until this season. So I think just do one or the other. I think at the moment, it's half-hearted. I can understand it on Adkins' part, though, because managers' shelf lives are so short that for him, he has to get results quickly, and he's just trying to desperately come up with the magic potion at the moment, because he knows that he's probably only got another 6 months. We can sit through lots of results with Michael Hector and Aaron Coole and others in the team, and maybe even get relegated and think, well, that's fine as long as the foundations are there. But I don't think Nigel Adkins can afford that.
Absolutely not. Well, plenty of questions on Nigel Adkins coming up in tweets and emails. But if you have got your own thoughts on, I suppose, style the substance, I guess, call of the debate, please send them in to us at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. The Twitter is @thetarlhurstend and it's facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. And on that note, time for your tweets and emails.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, welcome back to your tweets and emails. You just heard all the contact details by me and by a Sting, so I won't go through them again. I will just start from them. And Christopher Lash has tweeted in. He's also used the Two Unfortunates Twitter handle, which is @TwoUnfortunates, if you want to follow those guys on Twitter. His question is, what's wrong with our defence? Nice, easy question to start off. Johnny?
It's not just the defence.
Nigel, are you listening?
I don't think he knows the answers. In terms of the defence, that is. Defending is a team game, and you know, you can say that Chris Gunter is being targeted, but that is because, not necessarily because Chris Gunter's a bad defender. He's a solid championship defender. He's got so much experience at this level. He's an international for Wales. It's simply down to the fact that he's being exposed on that right flank, and it's something we've seen since the start of the season. People are getting one-on-one against him, and let's say on the odds chance, 50, you know, half the time you're going to beat him.
Rob, do you think that defence is good enough? Do you think that back, take Federici out of the equation, do you think that back four as it is good enough to be competitive in the Championship?
I'm not sure. I think my theory that I was thinking about today was really the defence started to crumble as an entity during the Premier League season, and I think confidence has been a problem since then. And I look at a player like Alex Pearce, and I think it was a real wake-up call to see players just passing the ball through them at will and scoring goals. And I think since then, we've never looked 100% secure. And even players who have now left the club, like Odie Mariappa and Sean Morrison, I never was 100% convinced by either of those. I just don't think we've had a really, really good defence for a long time now.
It's a very underinvested area, and I've made this point before, and I'll make it again. Reading haven't signed a centre-back for money in 2 years, and that was Adrian Mariappa, who's gone. Mm. The one they signed before that, Kasper Gorks, is gone. And even the £200,000 they spent on Sean Morrison in, what, January 2011, he's gone. So if you have a club that hasn't paid money for a centre-back in the best part of 5 years, I mean, what do you expect? Yeah, you can rely on your youth system all you want, and maybe you get a bargain-free transfer, you know, the likes of Sonko or whatnot comes along every once in a while, and we hope, really hope it's Anton Ferdinand this time round. But you don't invest in those players, you don't get it. It's the same at left-back. We were very lucky to find Jordan Ibiita. But again, there's no young left-backs coming through. They were relying on Ian Hart for years. They had a loan Ian Ryan Bertrand. They had a
Shorey back
there. Yeah, they had a temporary... But
Joe Mills.
Yeah, you're not buying these players and suddenly the depth becomes a problem and then you haven't got the backup to take them out of the firing line. I think both Michael Hector and Alex Pearce are fine defenders and same with Chris Gunter. But I think all three of them need to be taken out of the firing line because there's only so many times you can see three goals before you're sat there petrified to make a mistake. And that's why they're crumbling. Mm. It's not ability-wise. They haven't suddenly forgotten how to mark it. It's suddenly like, oh God, do I want to go over to this guy? What if I leave my man running and he scores? I don't want it to be my fault. I've got my man. You know, they're not dynamic. They're frightened. They're caught in the headlights. And the club hasn't invested and there's nothing to replace them with.
I think one more thing, and I wouldn't necessarily want to stick my head on the line about this, but I think or get the feeling that Nigel Adkins is more of an attacking coach. You think back to Brian Madama, his philosophy, whether it was because of the personnel we had, was keep it tight at the back and we'll try and nick a goal on the counter-attack. I think Nigel Adkins, certainly that Southampton side that went up at the same time as us, they scored a lot more goals, but they conceded a lot more goals than us. I wouldn't necessarily want to pigeonhole him as an attacking coach, but I think you do have to remember that certain managers do have a bit more focus on attack or a bit more focus on defence.
No. Absolutely. I mean, Mourinho is obviously the uber example of defensive
yeah,
coach.
1-0, 1-0.
I think you're probably right. I was sat behind a coach at a youth game last season against Newcastle, and he was talking to the guy next to him. I had no idea who he was, but he was talking about Adkins, and he seemed to be in the know, and he said Adkins likes a big lump of a central defender. And about every team he's had, he's always had someone. And I think there was a lad, Jones, back in the Scunthorpe days, like a really tall lad. And then obviously at Southampton, people like Jose Font.
Well, he wanted to sign Kasper's Gorks, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. So I think he likes that. And although Hector's a bit better on the floor, I think, you know, that is something. I don't think he really appreciates having defenders who will collect the ball from the goalkeeper and take the ball out of defence. So,
Well, we know his philosophy is very much keep the ball. That's what he said when he put three passing midfielders on back for one of the games. He said, what was his post-match comments? If you've got the ball, you don't need to win it back.
The problem
is we didn't have the ball. and, you know, we play such a sort of deep defensive line that ultimately I think he probably thinks you don't need as much pace because there's less space in behind. And so perhaps, you know, that's a bit of his philosophy. Play it wide, keep the ball, and you won't need as much pace.
Well, mentioning Nigel Adkins, Mark Sugar, regular Twitter into the show. Thanks again for getting in touch. Mark, he says, are we as supporters being too harsh on Adkins, or is the flak he's getting justified given results/performances? Johnny, what do you think? Do you think fan bases are turning on him prematurely, or is this justified?
I don't think they're turning on him prematurely, and I think the excuses are running out. You know, as I said last week, we can't forget that he's been at the helm nearly 2 years. And as you made the point earlier, Rob, about Brendan Rodgers, towards the end of his reign, you were starting to see results. You were starting to see the team get used to his style of play. I don't think we've quite seen that evolution from Adkins yet. And we've said on this podcast, many people across social media have made the excuse, I will call it an excuse, that we're missing three key players in the midfield. Well, what if those three players come back and A, they're not the same player? Players don't always recover from these sorts of injuries in terms of confidence or in terms of physical ability. Or two, they do come back, they're fine, and we still don't get the results. Then I think you've got to start asking the serious questions. And I think we can mitigate for him for now because he does have this excuse about three players in the midfield, a team that's been criminally underinvested in for the last 2 or 3 years. But the excuses are starting to wear thin. And I think in Adkins' post-match conference after Blackburn, you know, we talked about his comments earlier. He started to get a little bit like Rodgers was towards the end of his reign. Very defensive, very, I shouldn't have to explain myself to you, I'm the coach, you're the journalist.
Yeah, it was a bit Della v. Rodgers, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
You think that was better than...
yeah.
Anyway, Rob, what do you reckon?
Oh, no, I agree with Johnny. I mean, I think at the moment he's still got to be given time. The players he's brought in have been the most successful players, as we said. Admittedly, not by very high standards. And the injuries, of course, have been debilitating. So I think at the moment you certainly give him time. But I must admit, I think Johnny's right. I think time is running out.
Yeah, I think this week is going to be very, very big. You know, it's funny, there's two scenarios I can see for us sitting down next week for this podcast. Either we're like, okay, we're comfortable, you know, we've got the results we needed to, or...
Or we're doing a live broadcast outside the Medoski Stadium with pitchforks and...
Yeah, bring your own torch. And Alex Everson picks up on that and he tweets in saying, when was the last time in memory for each of you that you felt fans' opinion was so split over a manager?
I'd honestly can't really... Because even when Rodgers went, I think there was a bit of... There were a few sort of, oh, you know, he's a nice guy, but ultimately it was probably the right decision. But yeah, even that, I mean...
There was a lot more stronger Rodgers out sentiment, yeah, I think, at that time than there is now for Adkins.
I mean, even Steve Copper was, you know, please don't go.
Hmm.
Maybe it's more recent than we think, because when Brian McDermott got the sack, I think fans were quite divided. A lot of fans were wanting to pull the trigger, and a lot of fans were like, this isn't his fault.
Yeah, I think I was one of those that said, he doesn't necessarily deserve this, because as we saw, the team just wasn't good enough. I think that's when the cracks in the championship season, the championship winning season, started to appear, when we just saw that the team wasn't patently good enough, even with the three or four free chances that we added. I think probably, you know, there was a certain extent that about Brian McDermott.
I was outraged when McDermott was let go. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I just thought it wasn't his fault at all. You know, we were just, from the very first half of the game against Stoke on the first day of the season, I thought, hey up, we're not as good as these. Mm. And then one of the other teams you wouldn't expect to do that well. And then Tottenham and Chelsea just blew us away in the next two games. And you just thought, well, it's not Brian's fault.
Mm.
I think I'd have to probably go back, typically invoking being a bit of an oldster, but to maybe Ian Branford towards the end of his time in charge. You know, initially, obviously, he got his promotion, record run at the start of the season, and then the football did become pretty grim, you know, and we started losing as well. So, but because he'd achieved a lot with the club, there were still a lot of people getting behind him. So maybe it would be him, I think.
Yeah, I think just going back to the McDermott one, it came at such a strange time of the season as well, because the new manager wouldn't have had time to bring in his own players, not that there was any money to do that.
Mm.
And the new manager certainly didn't have any time to save us from relegation. I mean, I think Adkins came in just probably three or four games before we eventually were confirmed as relegated. And I think by then everyone knew that we would be going down. So it was a bit of strange timing, because we normally see that managers sort of leave either in December or near the end of the season, because that means that a new manager has a bit of time to...
Yeah.
I think Anton had I use this term loosely, a master plan. And I think he was very much hoping to turn Reading into an attractive passing side, and he saw this manager available that had done as much for Southampton and thought, I quite like this, or I wanted to get another coaching. Because I think he was looking at other managers, like they were going quite badly after Poirier, didn't we?
Yeah, Poirier and there was someone else.
So it was clear he wanted to change the style and thought he was going to have the money to do it, but then his dad told him he was a naughty boy and had to sell his football club. So that obviously ended. So okay, going back, Brantford then, I suppose. So that's before my time. I don't think fans' opinion was split over some of the other managers in my time. I don't think anyone was crying when Tommy Burns, God rest his soul, got sacked, or...
Terry Bullivant.
Yeah, taxi for Terry.
Yeah.
So no, I suppose we might have to go back that far. But I hope that answers your question, Alex. Mark, one of our assistant editors at Salasen, says, is the Championship harder now than it was in McDermott and Copple's time? Well, this is probably one for you. You've been following the Football League.
Well, I've been thinking about this, which is a really good question from Mark that provokes some debate on Twitter. I think, yes, it is harder, because I think if you look at any sport, people run quicker, they jump higher, they jump longer, they have better nutrition, better training, they don't do things like go down the pub and have 15 pints of lager, etc. So I think, objectively, yes, standards rise every year, and then you also have the fact that foreign players are coming into the game higher up the pyramid, particularly in the Premier League, and so a lot of the British players who were playing in the Championship 20, 25 years ago would have been top flight players. So I think the standards of skill and technical ability are higher, tactics, everything, you know, and also you have all the kind of the stats now. So we've seen it this season with teams taking on Reading, you know, like putting a player up against Chris Gunter, perhaps, you know, we can really detect that. But the thing is, it's the same for everyone. So Reading will have improved on all those things now.
Yeah.
So I think even, believe it or not, one thing I always wonder is if you took this Reading team, unimpressive as it is, and put it in 2006, would they do really well against the other teams in 2006? Probably not. But I think it's an interesting point to ponder. And I think it is stronger, but it's the same for everyone. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily. There isn't. I mean, look at the points tallies at the top this season. That it doesn't look like our record is going to be in any threat at all.
No, certainly not. No.
So whereas, you know, I still like saying that 116 was the greatest ever championship team. So
I think it's a bit tougher just in terms of how many good teams there are. Because I mean, you look at and how quickly the picture's changing from week to week. I mean, it's first month of the season, Nottingham Forest. You know, they're guaranteed to go up. Look at the goals they're scoring, the money they've spent. Suddenly they can't buy a win. Yeah. Then it's Norwich. Then Norwich go off the boil. Then Derby. And there's not that team or two striking out ahead of the pack this season. It's going to be a tight year. Almost like, I mean, the year Reading went up, Southampton, West Ham did very well and took the ball by the horns, but they got pulled back. But it's going to be an open game. And I think there's money to be made, gamble aware. For people, if you take a punt, because any team can go up this year.
Well, I think is as you just sort of made the point about the amount of teams being relegated, it's all about the money, and there's even more money coming down into the Championship now because of the teams that are relegated.
And four year parachute payment cycles as well, exactly. So relegated teams can stay stronger for longer,
and even more money being dished out to these teams. Think about Fulham, who spent 12 million on Ross McCormack. Cardiff spent however much on Sean Morrison. They also brought in pretty much an entire new team.
One goal, Adam Lafondra.
Yeah. Norwich haven't quite done the same. We certainly haven't quite done the same since we got relegated. But then you look at other teams as well. Like, I mean, Blackburn spent, 8 million on Jordan Rhodes a couple of years ago. Asamoah Longa goes for, 8 million-ish. Even a team like Bournemouth, I mean, they just consolidated.
Players like Callum Wilson.
Yeah, and they spend 3 million on Callum Wilson. Don't forget that when we...
That beats Reading's transfer record.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And that's a team that's never even been in the, or certainly not in recent memory, been in the Premier League. Our record transfer is MSA Fay or Greg Halford. You know, 2006, we broke our transfer record with Leroy Lita. Mm. It's always been a money game. And, you know, we go back to that 2006 side. We did actually invest a fair amount of money if you look at Lita and Convy. We struck a bit of luck with people like Kitson and Doyle. But money has always been... It isn't always the way, but it certainly does help you. And there's more money in the Championship now. So going back to the question, I think the Championship is harder because we're starting at a lower base where we're not spending money. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of teams around us that are.
Yeah. Well, again, that could be a pub chat in itself.
Yes.
And we could go on, but we must plough forward. Royal Hoops, another assistant editor at the site, says, once Anton Ferdinand is fit, would you throw him straight in? And this is interesting because we've started running our squad selector feature, which lets you basically pick your 18 every week. And Rob, I'm surprised at the amount of people that are going and putting not just Anton Ferdinand, but Danny Williams straight into the team. Would you endorse such a move, or do you think that they still need time to get up to speed? I know it's slightly different from Hoops' question.
I'd be tempted to put Ferdinand in, yes, I think so, because I think Jake Cooper at the start of the season, I don't think many of us would have expected him to play at all. And although he's done reasonably well since he's been in, I think he's a complete rookie. Michael Hector's a comparative rookie as well. And we're still not 100% sure whether he's a centre-back or a defensive midfielder. So I think that's what he was brought to the club for. Otherwise, it becomes a bad thing around the dressing room. You know, you bring someone in who's probably pretty highly paid and don't play him. And I think that just creates a bad atmosphere. So I would give him a go, definitely. I think Danny Williams is a bit different because, you know, you've already got Norwood in there and Akpan, so maybe he has to fight for his place in the team. But I think Ferdinand, I would be tempted just to have that kind of calming influence in there. Mm. Yeah.
Johnny, at the moment, 59% of you who have voted would throw Anton Ferdinand into the starting lineup on Tuesday. 58% Michael Hector and 67% Alex Pearce. So fans are pretty divided.
Bearing in mind that will add up to 200% because it'll be two centre backs.
Well, I think people are choosing different pairings, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's exactly the point. You've even got
nearly 20% for Jake Cooper.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't.
Do you put him straight in for Michael Hector or Alex Pearce?
We can't see if he's fit, and I don't know if he just, you know, he was on the bench because he could have done a job for 20 minutes if, you know, Pearce or Cooper got injured at the end of the game, because let's not forget Hector was suspended.
Yeah, but taking that aside then, if he is fit, he's passed every fitness test, he's declared ready to go, does he come into the team?
I think he has to. You have to change something in there, don't you? You have to change that. I mean, even you know, as a manager, you're almost cutting off your nose to spite your face. You're saying, right, you fans wanted this. Here you go.
Here's Anton.
And now, we don't know where Anton is, do we? No, but you know, and then you can say it's a win-win for him, because either Anton Fernand comes in, is rubbish, we lose again, and you know, you can sort of say, well, that's why I didn't bring him in. Or he keeps clean sheet and you think, oh, okay, we've got a decent player on our hands.
Rob, which one of the two at the back would you bring him in for then in that case?
I'd probably bring him in for Hector, to be honest, just because he's less experienced. I think we badly need some experience back there at the moment, even if it's just for a couple of games. And I think home games against Rotherham and Charlton are probably the time to do it, rather than away games at Cardiff and Norwich.
Yep. Just a quick one. Does Hector's indiscipline worry you? Seeing as he's suspended after this many games.
Well, five yellow cards is not great. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't worry me massively. I don't think of him as a hot-headed player. But, yeah, he needs to improve on that. And it would be nice to think that Adkins is maybe having a word with him on it.
Mm, absolutely. Right, moving on as well. Hoop said, if Adkins did depart, would you like to see Reading to revert to Coppell/McDermott type football? I think we've answered that one in pub chat. And Will from our stats desk, as I mentioned, please do check out his Blackburn analysis. It's a damn good read. And I say that all bias aside. He says, following on from Hoops' question, apart from the occasional match, has our style of football changed under Adkins? Again, we've tweaked on this, but just very briefly going back to it, can you say this has changed? If you were dropped in a Martian, as these seem to do in these, whenever these questions come up, these Martians drop in from outer space to watch football games all the time. But if Martian did come in and what?
Martian comes to Earth, first thing he does is pop to the Mars.
He wants to see this type of football. If you showed him a game from day one, that Arsenal game away when we got trounced, and today, could you say, oh, this is more of a Nigel Adkins team? Or has it not really changed?
I think you can just about see a bit of an evolution there, but it's not a particularly exciting evolution, I don't think. I mean, eventually it will get there, and I'm sure that, you know, I mean, hopefully if we get the right players in and we pick up as we normally do in February and March and we're playing beautiful tiki-taka football and Murray's got 35 goals, then you'll love it and you'll say, oh, this is the Aggie start, it's beautiful.
Rob?
No, I don't think it's changed very much at all. Unless you, or you could say it's actually changed all the time, like every week.
Yeah, I think that's... Well, I hope that answers. And just finally then, an email from Ollie Reid. He says, not sure all the hate on how Robson Kanu is fair. Had a stop-start a couple of seasons due to injuries. We all know he has the ability and think we should reserve judgment until he has an extended run in the team. Much happy to see him in the team over journeymen such as Mackie. The reactions team section on Saturday was cringeworthy. Did Mackie not miss an open goal last week? Rob, you listen to this show and you're, well, I'm not going to say too much because I think you're well aware of where me and Johnny stand on how Robson Kanu, but as an outsider coming into the show, where do you stand on him?
Well, I thought you might create a new 20-minute podcast every week just for Westy to talk about
how Robson Kanu report.
With possibly an extra time on Stephen Kelly.
Yes. I think it's a little bit too much of a scapegoat because I think a lot of people haven't been playing well, but there's no doubt about it, he's been disappointing. And, you know, given his ability, he looks like a really fit player and he's done well for Wales in some of the games this season. And I'm not one of these sort of one-eyed club fans who resents players doing well for national teams. I really like to see them do well for national teams, but, you know, given his ability, it really would be good to get more out of him, I have to say. But the position is maybe the issue. You know, where do you, you know, either you should probably just stick him on the wing, given the lack of width at the moment, and just say, right, have five games on the wing. I'm not going to take you off. Just see how you do.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
I mean, the thing is, and I guess, you know, sort of treading old ground, said this last week, Robson Kanu has shown flashes. It's just that consistency that he lacks, where he doesn't necessarily, you can't expect a player to perform every game, but he performs perhaps 1 in 4, 1 in 5. And the other thing is, he's a Reading boy, so he should be, or he's come through the youth system. And you look at players like Jake Cooper, Michael Hector, Jordan Obita, who we have a lot of love for because they have come through the system. Even Alex Pearce, who's perhaps outstaying or out wearing his homegrown sort of, you know, the love for him. But he should be one of those players who Reading fans become attached to, but for some reason it's just never happened.
I do understand the argument that Ollie's put forward there, in that, and I almost justify why Nigel Atkins keeps picking him, because Robson Kanu's potential is bigger than Jamie Mackie at this stage. If you manage, if it comes together for how Robson Kanu, we've seen, you could have an explosive player on your hands and could make a genuine difference. And I suppose the gamble that Atkins is taking is, if I keep playing him, maybe it's going to work. Maybe this is the game where it just suddenly clicks. A bit like, you remember, I've probably had these conversations about Jimmy Kebby and Shane Long if we've been doing this podcast. Because I remember a lot of people clamouring for Shane Long to be you know, taken out of that Brian McDermott team. Suddenly, all seemed to sort of click for him around Christmas, and he ends the season with 20-odd goals.
But I think in this sort of situation, where we are right now, you have the choice of gambling on a player who could be an 8 out of 10 or a 4 out of 10, or a player who will give you a solid 6 every week, like Jamie Mackie. If you're bringing it down to someone like Robson Kanu versus someone like Mackie, I think in this situation, you're going to get more 4s than 8s out of Robson Kanu, whereas you know you're going to get a shift every week from Mackie.
Final word from you?
I think it's a really good point. I think we need consistency at the moment, and that's why I advocated Ferdinand coming in. I think we just need a consistent side and players where we can rely upon to do what you said earlier, the Chris Gunter of last season, the 7 out of 10 every week. We need a lot of people doing that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for your tweets and emails. As I mentioned, at the Tarlest End is the Twitter handle, thetarlestend@gmail.com for emails, and facebook.com/Tarlest End. Just time to move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. A couple of things to go through, namely two football games that Reading are involved in, which are kind of important. Starting with Rotherham tomorrow night, as we record this, Tuesday night, depending on when you're hearing this. A team that came up this year, they've been very much a yo-yo team. We talk about Reading being a yo-yo team. Rotherham have been down, up, down, up. I mean, I remember playing them in the Championship a few years ago. In the season, I think we won the league with 106 points, and then they've been all the way down to League Two. Back up again, back down, and now they seem to be back. They've got a nice new stadium, New York, isn't it?
The New York Stadium, yeah.
And they seem to have adapted to the Championship pretty well. I mean, they're 17th, which, when you consider that Reading are 15th in the table, isn't too bad. Not in the best of form recently. They've only won one out of their last 5 games, that coming against Leeds. Their most recent game, a 3-0 home defeat to Borough. Rob, we'll start with you. What are you expecting from Rotherham? Is this a team that will prove a challenge to Reading, or should this be a game where we should expect a win?
I think it will prove to be quite a good challenge, actually. I think any team managed by Steve Evans is going to be combative, in your face. I can expect some fireworks tomorrow night. Sorry, that was unintentional. I think they're a good team. I mean, I saw them, the two televised playoff games against Preston last year, and they look really strong, I have to say. Alex Revel up front's quite a clever forward. I think they did change the squad wholesale in the summer because they had a lot of loan players last season, and they've replaced them with a whole lot of new loan players and other players. Ben Pringle's another player. I think he's an ex-Man United youngster. Mm. He's a good player. I think it's going to be a really hard game for Reading, and I think the way we're playing, I think it's going to be a draw. I'd say 1-1.
Say 1-1.
But, I mean, we sat here last week and said if you're Nigel Atkins and you don't beat Rotherham, is that the sort of time that you're asking questions? And I honestly can't. I don't know what to make of this game.
You say that. He's not here, but he's here in spirit. He has sent me a text message as Westy. And he said, if they lose Tuesday, I think he's gone. Referring to Nigel Atkins.
I think he'd be gone after the Charlton game, but that sort of gives him another chance to redeem himself. Because then you've got a 2-week international break and probably more time for a new manager to get settled in. But I think it's crazy that we're even having this debate. I mean, I think we'll probably just about come through on Tuesday night, tomorrow night. I think maybe a 2-1, but what you just want is, like we've been saying for the whole podcast, that solidity, that a sort of game where we don't necessarily look like we're in danger. And we sort of
kind of like the Blackpool game, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we got that against Blackpool, but I think that's you can't really say that we played particularly well against Blackpool, and you know they're an awful team. A team like Rotherham are going to try and lock in, try and hit us on the counter. They're not gonna come out and dominate the game. So it'll be an interesting challenge.
Absolutely, and while they've not been great this season, they've not been getting stuffed by teams. Okay, they got beat 3-0 at home by Middlesbrough, but you look at their away games this season, lost 1-0 at Derby, 2-0 at Watford, 2-0 at Brentford, 3-2 at Bolton. They're only losing, you know, by one or two. They're not exactly getting turned over, so they're going to be tough. So, Rob, you're not, unfortunately not in our official prediction league, but 1-1.
Yes, I definitely think 1-1. I can see it being like that, definitely.
Johnny, you are in our official prediction league. You are leading our prediction league. So I'm going to make you go first, because I might have to start playing tactical here and making some bold predictions. I went without a Blackburn saying we'd win, and that obviously blew up in my face. What do you reckon?
I'm going to go for 3-1. I'm liking my 3-1s.
You are loving your 3-1s.
The last three 3-1s have done me well, so I'm going to stick with the 3-1 to Reading.
Excellent. Well, for some reason, my spreadsheet thinks I'm trying to input the 3rd of January, but I'll enter that again a bit later. Meanwhile, I will say for Rotherham, I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win okay. I think they're going to win 2-0.
Clean sheet.
Yeah, and Westy has gone for a 1-0 win.
Okay.
And I also have Charles Watts' prediction, but I haven't got it to hand, so I'll mention it later. So Westy 1-0. The best bit of the podcast where you hear me typing. Anyway, moving on. After that, Charlton at home on Saturday. A team who were surprising a lot, and they were in and around the playoffs most of the season. They were drawing a lot of games, but they were unbeaten for their first 11 games this season. Had a bit of a wobble since. They've been beaten by Bournemouth and Fulham. Drew with Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, and this is probably the best time to mention. Have you seen Royston Trent's goal, Johnny?
I haven't, no.
It's on the front page of the Tyvest End. Watch it. It's the sort of thing that drives you absolutely up the wall, because it demonstrates exactly what we've been saying on this podcast for two seasons. There's a man who's got talent.
Yeah.
And he takes a year to do it or whatever.
We've been saying it for 5 years with Howell, haven't we? So
the best thing I can say about it is that I really hope some agent of a football club is watching it and thinks, oh God, we've got to get this player. Mm-hmm. Look at that goal. He'll transform our season.
Yeah.
And sign him. So, yeah, have a look on thetylersend.com. Royston scoring the goal that got Sheffield Wednesday a point against Charlton. But getting back to Charlton, Rob, again, a team that have done quite well. Obviously, they changed managers in the summer. Jose Riga out. And I can't even pronounce the new guys.
Bob Paters. Yeah. I think he's done really well. I mean, I think what's interesting about Charlton is that they did almost entirely change the side in the summer, which they needed to do. Because they've had this tie-in with Standard Liège, and they've been like loaning players, a bit like Watford have with Granada and Udinese. But the teams they're loaning with are not the standard of Granada and Udinese. So at the end of last season, I think they were pretty lucky to stay up, quite honestly. And I went to the game at the Valley and we won 1-0, probably should have won more comfortably. But this year they've started really well. They've brought in like a few good players who've really hit the ground running and had some great results. But last four or five games, including night on televised London Derby at Fulham, they were like well beaten. Yeah. Bournemouth away, we know, is a tough game, whatever way you look at it. I think the good thing for us is we're not going to underestimate them. I think we'll go into it, particularly we've had a dodgy result against Rotherham. I think we'll think, right, we've really got to be on a mettle here. And I just think we'll nick it. I think we'll kind of win the game 1-0.
Yeah, I think what also might play into our favour is that the players that we've been talking about, the Anton Ferdinands, the Danny Williamses, and even maybe Gareth McCleary, will be available and certainly a bit fitter. So we should have a stronger side on Saturday than we do on Tuesday. So, Johnny, thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, you look at their form, they've only lost two games. One of them was Bournemouth away, which they lost 1-0. We lost 8-0 in theory. Well, in reality, we lost 3-0, but we should have lost about 8-0. And Fulham, you know, they just changed their manager, I believe, and I think they may be unbeaten since
they've Kit got their, Simons.
Since they got the new, they certainly picked up form anyway, and that was on a Friday night on the telly box. I think we'll draw with Charlton. I think, as you say, we shouldn't underestimate them, but I think we might underestimate them, and I think we'll draw that game, because I think Charlton have certainly performed above expectations, and it's like I said for the last couple of weeks, we can't go into games expecting results anymore, and I think this is where we're at now.
Score prediction then? You're going for a 1-0.
Rob? Uno.
I think 1-0 to Reading.
1-0 Reading. What am I going to go for? I'm going to be blindly optimistic again. Actually, no, because when I'm optimistic, things go badly wrong. When will I learn? I think I've only correctly predicted two wins I've got right for Reading this season. So I'm going to go for the pessimistic 1-0 home defeat. And hope we definitely don't. Westy, out of interest for the prediction leaguers, has gone for a 2-2. So, and Charles Watts, I still can't say what he said. Charles Watts has said he's gone 2-1 for the Rotherham game, and I will get his Charlton prediction in the podcast extra on Friday. So there we go. All the fun of the Prediction League Fair. For those of you who are interested, which is probably just me and Johnny in this room, Johnny leads the Prediction League with 11 points. Charles Watts is up to 9. I'm on 7. And Westy's still propping up the table on 5. That's our champagne moment for the week.
As a neutral, just commenting on the Prediction League, I would say it is a strong advantage for Charles to be able to choose his result after the Rotherham games. I think that will inform
the
Charlton games. Like on this. A technicality.
I think I might delay my pick.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that out, I think.
Well, that wraps up any other business. Just a quick plea. First of all, if you like the show, please subscribe on iTunes and maybe leave us a comment. It's the easiest way to get both this show and the podcast extra. Also, plenty of great content up on thetylersend.com. Lots of interesting bits, including why Reading might be facing a January transfer embargo. If you're in any way intrigued about financial fair play, I know it's not exactly the most glamorous subject, but it could have serious ramifications for the side. So give that piece a read. As I've mentioned several times this podcast, the stats review. Also, the squad selector, it's been really well received. We've had nearly 200, over 200 people, in fact, pick their team for the Rotherham game. And it's quite interesting. I'll have the results of that up probably actually before you get this podcast. But take a look anyway and join in for the Charlton game. And Rob, I think the final word to you. I mean, what sort of things can we expect up on the Two Unfortunates over the next few weeks and months?
Well, we've moved to a new format where we're publishing a cluster of posts each month, and this month's cluster, which is going to come in a couple of weeks, is on managers. So we're going to get some people writing about the managerial turnaround or not at their clubs. And this is obviously opposite in terms of the Atkins situation. So we have Gary Andrews writing on Paul Disdale at Exeter, who's like hung on for a long time despite some poor results lately. We're going to get Matt Rowson, who's a Watford blogger, talking about the fact that they've had four managers this season. And we're going to have a little bit on the Premier League as well with Alan Pardew, that situation there, which of course would be of interest to Reading fans as well. So yeah, lots to look forward to, and that will be in a couple of weeks, and before then we'll probably have a couple of book reviews.
And where can they find the blog?
It's www.thetwounfortunates.com, and on Twitter we're at @twounfortunates.
Excellent. Very, very, again, even Rob wasn't here, I'd say definitely check it out. It's fantastic. It's always great to find out what other bloggers around the Football League are doing. And obviously the excellent work that you and Lloyd do. So yeah, very much worth a follow and a read. That just about wraps up for this week. We'll be back next week to take you into a 2-week international break. Westy's tentatively scheduled to be here. We've got to negotiate a new contract with him.
Need to free up some funds.
Exactly.
Check the funds are there.
Well, he's in the process of buying a new house. So, you know, he's moving up in the world and leaving us behind. But no, Rob, thank you very much for joining us. Definitely have to get you back on more regularly. It's been great having you here. And again, thanks very much for listening. And stay tuned. Go head over to tylersend.com. And meanwhile, I'll hopefully see you on Friday with Charles, if not next week for this show. Very well. It's funny how the crowd's always be betrayed.